Amateur Presentation.
Welcome back to another Untitled Movie Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Rohrbeck, alongside, he's allergic to tomatoes, but he is tomato meter approved, Eric Marchin.
Matt, what kind of A24 fan are you?
I'd like to say I'm firmly Team Iron Man over Team Captain America. I think the Iron Man movies overall I've enjoyed more. I know me and you are Iron Man 3 defenders. Mm-hmm. Whereas the first Captain America, I don't know. I like A24. I'm an A24 boy. I'm a little bit of a film bro. Although you got the film bro look going on today, because today we are reviewing Alex Garland's Civil War, not Marvel Studios Civil War, everyone. Eric's got the backwards snapback on and the red sunglasses from Civil War, looking like a Matt Rohrbeck clone, and I'm over here I don't have a hat on today, but I'm wearing a Rizzo's House of Parm shirt, so basically an A24 shirt. Eric, what's going on? How are you?
Matt, not much. You know, it's the time of year where it feels like it's actually starting to get really busy. I know you're just finishing up school, and there's a number of big movies coming up that we will be reviewing probably on a more consistent basis. So we apologize for the Civil War review.
Start of a, yeah, but we have a great interview with you and Alex Garland. That was our main piece of content. So yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And it's nice to know. I was just going to say quickly, it's nice to know, because I can't even see you that well, so I can't tell when your lips move. So I'll take these glasses off in a second. But it is interesting that, you know, week by week, movies are pretty disposable when it comes to studio fare. And yeah. So the talking points get stale by the Friday after a new release. So by the time you get to the end of a new week, you're on to the next film. But with Civil War, it does seem to be picking up more steam in terms of the conversation and debates that are being had around the politics of the movie, the messaging of the film, whether or not it's propaganda. And it's a wide release. And usually a movie like this, because it's an A24 movie, it has an indie sheen to it, would be a platform style distribution release. And so with that in mind, it's just fascinating that even now we can still talk about this in the second week of its release. And you know, dissect it. And I think people are still interested in having that conversation because it is so polarizing.
Yeah, I think because of the political climate over the last, you know, I mean, forever, but really the last 10 years or something in the US, when you're dropping a movie like this that, yeah, has the A24 logo, yes, directed by Alex Garland, but it is being released in IMAX theaters. It's probably A24's biggest release. It was marketed like it was a blockbuster. Like I'd say like, it's accessible in a way that it isn't necessarily what you'd expect it to be based on the trailers, but I still think it's, you know, it's not as weird or off-putting as some A24 movies could be to, you know, a quote-unquote, you know, mass audience or the normies out there. I'm not saying that A24 is even...
What are you, Michael Fassbender from The Killer?
A24 is even on the higher end of the, you know, the more normal weird stuff you can get. And you know, basically the blockbuster indie studio. So, I think, you know, discourse is always going to be biggest when a movie's about to drop, or even the lead up to a movie based on trailers and what people think the movie might be. So, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing avoiding it that first week. Like, ideally, we want to get these reviews out on the day that they come out or something like that. That way we can be part of that discussion. It's just how things netted out, some technical issues, other things like that we weren't able to. But it's kind of fun a week later. Now, we're going to do full spoilers. So at this point, you've probably either seen Civil War, or if you haven't yet, we can give quick thoughts off the top without spoiling anything, and then we'll go immediately into spoilers. But we're pretty much going to cover the whole movie. And yeah, I think there is both a lot to talk about, and then also I think just based on the way that the movie sets itself up, where you kind of apply your own politics to the movie, and it's not really, it just drops you in and isn't really telling you what's going on in this Civil War, that I think a lot of the talk, yeah, I will get into it, but I mean, with any movie, like discourse, it's fun to have a conversation about something as long as people, but no pun intended, keep it civil. So yeah, I don't know. Let's get into it though. Like, we'll talk about it. We saw this movie a couple weeks ago now, and we've, I think it's a good movie to sit and digest. You've now seen it twice, Eric.
Yes.
We don't necessarily need to go into the reasons why you wanted to see it a second time, or we can, it's up to you, but
no,
I'm going to kick.
No, not worth it.
Yeah. I agree with that. So I'll kick it over to you first, since you've seen it twice. First, like, just quickly, spoiler free, do you think it's worth seeing? And then immediately you can go into, I'll actually kick it off by saying I really like the movie a lot. I'm a big fan of like dystopian kind of post-apocalyptic, even though that's not exactly what's happening here, but it kind of is, but very dystopian. And this aesthetic, I thought Garland, you know, nailed it. Yes, we can get into, is the messaging kind of very simple, or is it just war is bad, or is it the apolitical nature of it kind of problematic and things like that? But I don't know. We'll get into that. But I do think it is very good, and I think you should see it in the theater. So I'll just kick it over to you, Al.
Yeah, I'm not as enthusiastic per se as maybe you are, Matt, but I still really appreciate the movie and would recommend seeing it, because it is a film that is getting people to have a conversation afterwards. And, you know, any movie worth its time is something that you project on. You know, that's the whole point of a movie like this, where you're watching it and you are looking at certain images that feel very much like they would happen in our world, you know, and not a multiverse. Like, they feel, you know, very much real to what has gone on in the last 5 to 10 years in terms of administration changes in the US, you know, the online discourse, as you were mentioning before, but then even, you know, the sort of unusual alliances that occur within the context of the film. And we'll get into that more. But I think on a technical level, and as what, basically what Alex Garland does as a director and his collaboration with cinematographer Rob Hardy, the sound design is phenomenal. Everything on that aspect of the filmmaking side of things, I highly recommend seeing the movie. Do I think it's Alex Garland's best film? No. I think Ex Machina still probably is my favorite, because it felt a little bit more clear with what it was saying. And the self-contained nature of the story allowed for a more inventive sort of narrative to build. And Ex Machina even feels more sort of resonant now because of what we're talking about with AI.
AI, yeah, for sure.
And so with this, you know, there's a very much like, oh, this feels like, oh, we're, you know, 2 or 3 steps removed from getting to this point. You know, as Canadians, we're bystanders in this, but our currency is quite high, which is nice, in this film. But when you're watching the movie, I think what I did struggle with a little bit is the message of the film and the apolitical, neutral nature of what Alex Garland is trying to say. Because I do think there are things he is actually quite critical of based on politics, and we'll get into it with the spoiler aspect of it. And to be honest, I also think that's a bit of a cop out, because no movie that is ever made that points a camera and is telling a story doesn't have some sort of political leaning. Yeah. There's always something that the filmmaker or the writer or whoever is making a production, they have something to say. So that is inherently political. And so saying that and having that remove, you know, I get it from the stance of a journalist, because that's also an ethical question.
I was going to say, like, that's kind of what, you know, following these war photographers is that.
But even they have, you know, an opinion on things, and just because they're behind a camera or, you know,
where they're supposed to stay neutral and just show it for what it is. Yeah. There is going to be a political leaning or some sort of moral, you know, compass that they're trying to follow, whatever they believe in. Yeah,
absolutely. And so when you're looking at that as a whole, I just wish it was more pointed in its social commentary, because everything it's saying feels as though, you already mentioned it, the ultimate sort of takeaway is that war is bad.
Yeah.
And we could be, you know,
heading in that direction.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't think it's on the level of, say, like something like Orwell's 1984, which really captured a very specific moment in time and felt like the repressive nature of, you know, government and, you know, the people being sort of put into prisons and assimilated for the most part. It doesn't get to that. And even, you know, talking about dystopian films, you have the Purge movies, which over the course of that franchise, you know, the first Purge, not the first Purge, but the Purge, was a great idea, but it didn't really deliver on its concept.
Yeah.
Where over time, though, you did see that franchise being more direct about its politics and what it was saying about the 1%, you know, justifying their means to kill, you know, people of color and those that have a low financial sort of background. And so with that, like, it felt like, oh, it's actually, you know, saying something in that division. And I've even had conversations with people where the conversation is, well, you know, Civil War, in order to get as many people to watch the film as possible, you have to be neutral because you're going to alienate one side of your audience and not make the money. But I also call
Dwayne Johnson.
but I also call bullshit on that, because it's like the point of art, the point of,
yeah,
you know, telling a story is to be specific.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to not compromise those feelings. And, you know, if this was something from Universal or Warner Brothers or a company like that, I would get it. Or even like last year.
It would be more quote unquote entertaining, or it would just kind of sensationalize the whole thing.
Well, look at Top Gun Maverick, right? Yeah, yeah. Like, look at that whole conversation we had last year with the geopolitics of it and the villain not
name a country or whatever,
like, but you knew it was either Iran or North Korea. It's just that they didn't say it because they didn't want to alienate, you know, a potential market for the film, so you keep that neutral. But that's a different type of movie. This is something that actually
can be saying something.
Exactly, like, and has an author's signature to it.
Yeah, but the bigger, you know, A24 had that whole thing come out saying that they want to make bigger movies and they want to get into blockbusters. So I think they're trying to thread the needle there of, like, you know, finding that sweet spot of both being an A24 movie and having, you know, a vision and a, you know, a feel to it and saying something, but then also trying to reach the biggest audience, you know, possible. And maybe that watered down the movie a little bit. Like, you know, I'm actually okay with the movie, you know, not necessarily having like a firm stance one way or another, because I think taking it and dropping you in and letting the audience apply their own politics to it, I think is kind of interesting. And I think, you know, I think the movie is haunting. I agree with you with a lot of what you said on the technical side. I think that's where the movie really, really shines in its sets and its set pieces. And it's not an action movie, but there is a lot of action, and it the sound design really scares the shit out of you. Like, gunshots are intense. The Jesse Plemons scene, we can get into full spoilers now too. The Jesse Plemons sequence is one of the most disturbing, you know, tense, you know, 5 to 10 minute sequences I've seen in a movie in a long time. It's very much a horror movie. And I think just, you know, trying to go, okay, imagine this is the world. Like you said, it's not a superhero universe. It's not whatever. It's not a futuristic. It's literally could be happening, you know, a year from now, and dropping you in and going, this is the real world. You know, Texas and California are united. You don't know why. You just know that there's this, you know, president who's a dictator and he's on his third term, and you can just kind of apply your own shit to it. And then just the visuals, I think, are what stand out. And applying, you know, I'm sure a ton of research was done and, you know, talking to war photographers and looking at footage and studying civil wars and wars in the other countries, in other countries. And I think, you know, I just found it very fascinating to watch because I like that imagery. I find it really kind of interesting of just, holy shit, how this could happen, but I can't even fathom it happening in the United States, even though it could easily happen. But this happens in Europe and other countries all around the world where wars start. And just applying that to an American lens, I think was fascinating in the politics going on right now. Of like, the U.S. has been involved in so many wars around the world. They've sent troops to all these different places, and there has been American soldiers walking down the streets of these cities in all across the planet. And I think just seeing that in these locations that you've either been to or you've seen in movies before, and then just following like a war photographer that would be going to, again, capture a war in any other country, but having that be in the US, I know it's very simple and I know it's surface level almost. But I just found it disturbing, the imagery and this story, and just like going, holy fuck, this could happen. And I think it's just like a what if scenario. Sorry to keep going back to like Marvel puns and shit like that. But like, I just, you know, it was both thoroughly entertaining, extremely like haunting, some of it intense at times. You know, I have problems with, and I think we both are on the same page here with some of the plot and story elements, like,
and dialogue
like it's, we're going to talk about Challengers soon. And, you know, it's two things. They do similar things, and screenwriters, you know, I think it's a very classic movie thing that we talk about all the time of just bringing things back in the third act or, you know, whatever, Chekhov's gun and all this other shit you can talk about in screenwriting and stuff. But there's a way to do it that feels like it's a great payoff. And then there's a way to do it that just feels like lazy and kind of like eye-rolly. And I feel like this falls more in the eye-rolly category than the satisfying payoff category. Like when you even have your main character, you know, named Lee Smith, who, and, you know, is named, I actually thought her name was Lee Miller, but like they didn't.
Lee Miller is the photographer.
I know, yeah. But just Lee being the name, I guess that's better. Cause at first I was like, wait, is her name Lee Miller in the movie? Cause that would be too much. But even them like referencing it and talking about it, I was just like, that's the kind of writing that I was just like, I don't know. And then like when you get into the end, we're going full spoilers, everyone. Sorry, I'm going to jump around. And you have that moment with Kirsten Dunst at the end when she gets shot in front of Kaylee Spaney's character.
Jesse.
And I just, it just feels so overwrought. And like, and it's just to the point where it kind of pulls you out of it, where these things are discussed earlier in the movies and are set up so obviously that you just kind of wish they were a bit more clever in their storytelling or their writing. So
it doesn't feel natural. Like that's the problem with it, because
it feels like a movie at the
end. Yes. Yeah.
One more point.
Yeah, sure.
When you talked about how this feels like it's dropping you into reality, that's what rips you out of that reality and makes you go, oh, I'm not in the actual world. I'm in a movie. I'm watching a movie. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of shit, like, I think it would have been way, and I know this is a, you know, when you're critiquing something, you can't play backdoor screenwriter or filmmaker or anything like that. When you go, well, the movie didn't, I wish it did this. It's not necessarily I wish. It's just like, I think there's more interesting ways you could have been surprising and say like, you know, war is awful and can take a life away in any moment. And they do that with other characters. But it, to me, it would have been even interesting if you're going to kill off that character, just like have it be done halfway through the movie randomly and shockingly. Like it felt so set up that it was just kind of like by the end, you're like, all right, I'm watching a movie now. And this is, I feel like a stage play or something like that. That's a little over the top, but overall, I mean, I still do think it's haunting. There's some great imagery, the fucking sound design. If you see it in IMAX or something like that, or Dolby with Dolby Atmos, like it's jarring, like to the point where you'll jump multiple times based on gunshots and stuff like that. Like it's an intense movie, but I think the script, it falls apart a little bit. So sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's a great point to make, because you have the scene with Jesse Plemons where you feel like you don't know what's going to happen. And it's so intense in terms of how things are playing out. And there's nothing from a previous scene that can help you or comfort you, because you're going back in your mind, you're thinking, oh, is there a reference to this or something in terms of how they were talking about it? Because there's a lot of conversations, you know, in the road trip style of narrative structure that Garland is using here, where, you know, it's meant to meander a little bit as they go from, you know, New York into Pittsburgh, into West Virginia, and then to DC. And so when you have these characters that, you know, are getting to know each other a little bit in the car, you know, obviously Kirsten Dunst's character, Lee, knows Stephen McKinley Henderson, Sammy, and Sammy's a bit of a mentor. And then you have, why am I forgetting his name now? Wagner Mora, yeah. As Joel, who, you know, is a bit of like, you kind of see it in that conversation that they have in New York at the beginning, that he's a bit of an adrenaline junkie. He's seeking, you know, the story and wants to be the one to get that quote from the president, because Nick Offerson's third term president, who is, you know, considered a fascist and has used airstrikes on his own people and continues to, you know, not surrender to the rest of the world. You know, there's that conversation that you mentioned already with Western forces, with Texas and California creating an alliance. The conversations that these four characters have on their trip, a lot of it plays out through the conversation, especially the way that Stephen McKinley Henderson's character talks about how you're never going to, you know, be satisfied, or the evilness that you've built up in your head of this dictator. It's never the same when you meet them. You know, they're just a sad, pathetic human being that is begging for their life. And what happens? You have Nick Offerman's character at the end begging for his life, looking like Steve Bannon. And so with that, it's like that payoff, that setup and payoff is subtle, because it's something where it's just almost anecdotal in conversation, where history repeats itself. You know, these, you know, tyrants are always, you know, they're horrible people. And when they're in power, they act as though they're gods. But then when they're taken down, they revert back to being, you know, this sort of sad, innocent, fragile person that needs help. And, you know, that's what happens with this. And when you're watching, it's like that I appreciated. Or the conversations that they have, you know, about these characters and how they look at dehumanization, as I get the thumbs up, you know, the conversations about, you know, how people see each other in wartime. Yeah. Those are conversations that are worthwhile. And I think they're provocative and they have something to say. But then you have that whole conversation with, you know, Dunstan Spaney's characters talking about, you know, well, if I died, would you take my photograph? And as soon as that conversation happens, you're like, okay, one of these two is going to die. This is foreshadowing. And one of them is going to take the other one's photo as they die or when they're dead. And what happens? Well, Kirsten Dunst dies in the final act, partly because Kaylee Spaney's Jesse is somewhat reckless in the moment and has, you know, her experiences is that she has been able to get out of difficult situations every time. So she's willing to take, I think, a greater risk, where Dunst is more experienced and knows the danger that's in front of her. And also being, you know, desensitized and hardened by it all, and maybe getting a little bit of her humanity back in the third act in terms of a redemption storyline. You see how Dunst is more careful because she's had more experiences, as we see in certain moments of not flashbacks, but thoughts of her own sort of journey through photography and her being this sort of big name photographer. You know, they talk about, then this is another eye rolling thing where, like, I just think it's not very creative in terms of what they're calling it, the Antifa massacre, where it's just like, okay, call it something else. It's not so obvious. And that's where, like, the shallowness of it as well comes into play a little bit. But what we were talking about before with the sound design and it being almost like a jump scare, there's a moment in the movie where you know, it's a bit of downtime where they're kind of just parked out in this almost, it looks like a parking lot, maybe near a train station. And, you know, there's a firefight going on a little ways away, but it's mostly quiet. There's not even really much score. And then you have a moment where Dunst is kind of like, you know, looking off in the distance, and then it does a hard cut to gunfire as a raid is going on. And the intensity of the bullets being fired and also the impact that those bullets have. This is something I asked Garland in the interview about how you portray violence in film. You actually see what a bullet can do to a human body in this. And I think that's also important because in a lot of these movies, something like The Purge, where I think, you know, I was giving The Purge a little bit more credit early on about its politics being a little bit more clear. The Purge is also an exploitation movie and it's more genre oriented. So you have blood and guts and people being, you know, ripped apart in various ways for entertainment, where this doesn't approach, you know, violence and executions and death in the same manner. And I think that's also very important to not only this type of narrative, but how you handle it within the context of telling a story that's about politics, that's about division, that's about war.
Yeah, exactly. And it shows you the ramifications of war, right? And what it can do to a person, to a country, an area. And I think that's it. When you break it down into like the little set pieces of the movie, like that's what I keep thinking about. You have that Christmas fair sequence with the sniper,
Winter Wonderland,
which is really awesome. You have the sequence at the car wash, which I think is great and intense. Then you have obviously the last act at the White House and in the Oval Office, and then I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, but they all stand out. Obviously the Jesse Plemons sequence that we've mentioned many, many times. You have the refugee camp sequence. It's a little quieter. So I keep thinking about each individual scene, and I just think it's very well put together in each sequence. I feel like is memorable or has a great moment. That said, not without its faults, which we've brought up over and over again. But yeah, I just think that last act, like, it's exciting, don't get me wrong, like that storming the White House,
and that's where you're projecting like that, right? Where you're projecting January 6th onto the visuals of it, or the killing of Osama bin Laden, right? Where those are the things that I think, you know, a lot of people, whether they're right, left, or in the center, will see those images and be like, oh, is this referencing that war, or is that referencing that moment in history? Because it does feel very contemporary in its references, even to the point at the beginning of the movie, we do see some archival footage of, you know, various protests and riots, and you know, some of which have been gathered through questionable sources. A couple of right-wing politics or pundits.
Yeah, there's some not great stuff with that and the AI imagery that they've been using in some of their marketing that I don't necessarily agree with. So we'll definitely flag that here. But
yeah, you've been flagged, Alex Garland.
Yeah, I like the relationships in the movie. Like, I like that you mentioned the road trip kind of style of movie of having to, and obviously like dystopian road trip movies are, I feel like, very much my thing, or pieces of fiction. Like, I'll bring up,
do you love The Road
again, and The Road, and yeah, there's lots of, like, it's very much my shit, which is I think why you know, I really dug this. But the relationships I thought were great, even though I don't love how it ends up. But like, I like the Lee and Jesse relationship. I like Joel. I love Stephen McKinley Henderson. I thought he was
great
in this. He's wonderful. Like, we talked about some of the emotion too, where his death I thought was very earned. And that sequence with Jesse Plemons, where you're like, I don't know how the fuck they're gonna get out of this. His sacrifice and him helping them, even though he tells them over and over again, don't do it, like, don't go. And like, just his whole thing of them bringing him and him feeling old and that he can't keep up and things like that. Like, I think that shit is done really, really well. And he's such a great character actor that, you know, Sammy You know, his death is more emotional than Lee's that happens at the end of the movie, right?
Because the writing gets in the way. Yeah,
exactly.
Where Henderson really, well, he's a theater actor, right? Yeah. And so Henderson is this, like, you know, ubiquitous character actor who mostly gets these bit roles. He was also recently in another A24 movie, Beau is Afraid, and amazing as Joaquin Phoenix's psychiatrist in that small Great scene. Dune. Obviously, you know, the first Dune, Fences, pops up super briefly at the beginning of Manchester by the Sea. Always good. Always, you know, he's stoic. He's fatherly. He's educated. He brings so much dignity to the role, but he's also the smartest human being in this group of four.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's conversations about ageism and not being able to move the same way that the younger performers do and the reporters, as, you know, you're in a war zone or something like that. But every conversation that he has, I think, could have easily become eye-rolling in the way that the Dunst-Spaney conversation was. Yeah. But he delivers it in an almost anecdotal, kind of matter-of-fact way that doesn't feel like, oh, you're getting foreshadowing. But it is, because even the conversation he has about the Western forces at the beginning, you know, the idea that California and Texas, which are strange bedfellows, decide to unite against the president
and enemy, yeah.
DC, because yeah, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
You know, that old saying. And then, you know, Sammy says in at the beginning is that even if they succeed, as soon as they do, they'll be fighting again. They'll fight each other, because even though that the movie ends with them killing the president and it's kind of like happy in a win, and that photograph also shows you another form of dehumanization.
I do like the use of photographs throughout the movie too.
Yes, yeah. But when you get to that moment, you realize this is a very short-lived victory, because as soon as like the next day hits, those two states are going to be at each other again.
Who is now trying to and then you have obviously, you know, they also have the loyalist states, which are loyalist to the president, correct?
I think
that was like, and then you have the New People's Army, which they don't really go into that much, which is like the northeastern states and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
and then
that.
Florida was kind of in
Florida Alliance.
Alliance, which kind of bridged, bridged California and Texas together.
So you're saying Texas isn't going to join up with the Florida Alliance and try to take out the fucking...
Well, they might. It might become California, like a wrestling thing, where like a wrestling storyline, you know, comes into play where, you know, it was a temporary alliance. It was a convenience.
Yeah.
And, you know, both of these, you know, states were threatened by a bigger force. So that's what you do. And then as soon as that force has been taken out, you fight over...
Yeah.
The power that's been left behind. And the other thing that I think this movie is very critical of, and I think Garland can't say that the movie's completely neutral, is that the film weirdly is critical of people being neutral or being removed from the war, ignoring it or being ignorant to
that
it.
That one town that they go to.
In West Virginia. Right, yeah. And so that scene is creepy because it feels like, okay, well, in this little bubble, everything is normal, but it's not. You know, you're denying it. And we've seen a lot of denial recently, whether it be with climate change or COVID. But Garland's always been interested in this because there's conversations about Kaylee Spaney's parents and Dunst's parents as well being sort of, you know, not wanting to have anything to do with it. Even, you know, Garland's the first book that he wrote and script with the beach. There's a sequence in that where one of the characters on this, you know, idyllic island in Thailand is injured, and the rest of the people on the island have to make a decision because he's ruining the good times. And so what they decide to do is they just decide to cast him out and put him on the other side of the island, out of sight, out of mind, so they don't have to deal with it and worry about, you know, any responsibility. And so, like, that's something I think he has been always critical of, because you can see it in The Beach and then you can see it here in Civil War. And when you're watching a movie like that, well, that's actually being very political, and that's taking a very strong critical stance against a certain type of behavior. Even Casablanca, you know, that's the whole, you know, sort of point of that movie as well, is that Rick, Humphrey Bogart's character in Casablanca, is neutral. You know, you can have allies and the Nazis come into the bar and sure. everything is fine. You know, it's neutral ground, but you really can't be neutral in a situation
yeah.
where people are going to concentration camps. You just, yeah. you can't.
Yeah. And I think the movie does an okay job with that sometimes, using war photographers as that kind of metaphor and journalists, right? Like of a journalist supposedly having to be neutral, but you know, you're a human being. You can't, you know, as much as you're like, shit, I can't get involved, I just need to capture this. There are times, like, obviously, that we keep referencing the Jesse Plemons sequence is great. And just shout out to Jesse Plemons. What a guy who can play a dirtbag, who can play like a likable guy. And he can have 5 minutes of screen time and steal the movie. And he's just so fucking good. But
well, he's also one of those guys where that character in Civil War, you could take that character and you could put him in Game Night. Sure. You know, it's so versatile in terms of yeah. how he performs this type of role, because you look at this character and I just have this feeling that any other actor in the role would have been maybe a little bit more cartoony or over yeah. the top or Southern in their performance.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's awful. He's a racist soldier. And you see what he and his other buddy have already done in killing and creating a mass grave. But the way that he plays it, it's so understated.
Yeah, it's so nonchalant.
And like, that's just what makes it terrifying.
That's what he's good at, man. Like, yeah. he's really good at just, like, you know, in Breaking Bad, the same way, where he was just, he is so nonchalant in his delivery, or so casual with it all. It makes it so much more unnerving, like, in all of this stuff he's done. He's very good at that, but then he's also just good. He's just a good actor.
But then, like, really Jungle Cruise, you look at yeah. that movie, like, he's so over the top, and it's not a great movie by any means, but makes
he's fun. Yeah.
Those scenes that he's in,
absolutely. Yeah, so I think a mixed bag a little bit, but I am still mixed pretty positive on the movie. I think, you know, it is a visual kind of feast. It is unnerving, it's unsettling. It plays like a horror movie. Maybe its message is a little muddled or surface level and things like that. Yes, it's a little overwrought, where you kind of are rolling your eyes in that last act, but ultimately I still think it's quite good. It's very much my jam, though, so like, if you follow along with like kind of my taste and stuff, I think you will dig this, and you've probably already seen it, but I'm gonna give the movie a 4 out of 5. So I think it's quite good, but I think it loses a little bit of being that, like, great, like, that amazing kind of movie, like, so I'm gonna go with a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I also am mixed positive because of the filmmaking, I think, is so strong, and the conversation, I think, is worth having, and
yeah.
for those two reasons. And I also do really like Alex Garland as both a writer and director, and I think he does have a singular vision and is a very talented guy. And, you know, having talked to him now 3 times, the thing I've always gotten from each conversation is that he's very self-deprecating, and he always gives credit to other people and never just himself, or barely himself, and realizes that the collaboration process is so important to making any movie. And you have to respect anybody that goes into that and knows that, okay, just because
it's not just me,
just because you wrote it or you're directing,
or
it doesn't necessarily
on it. Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean it's all you, because you know, I've always had that weird sort of thing in my head when I see, you know, and you're in the moment, but when you see someone win an award and they go up and they say, oh, thank you for watching my movie, or I want to thank my crew, or something like that. And Garland, even in the conversation that we had, you know, mentions how, like, you know, visionary director, and, you know, from the great mind of, like, all that is just marketing bullshit. And it was just refreshing in that way to have that kind of conversation with him. And another quick thing that I think we should also we should mention is his music is underrated in a lot of his movies, because
you
look at Ex Machina, like the song Get Down, It's Saturday Night, which is an amazing scene with Oscar Isaac. And then throughout his entire filmography, he takes songs that are, you know, from specific eras and plays with them in a way that, you know, could be over the top or, you know, hit you on the head, but they have like a cool sense of irony to them. And even with this, you have, you know, De La Soul in here. You have a lot of a couple of songs by Suicide, yeah. A cover of a Bruce Springsteen song. And so I always think the music aspect of his movies are exciting to see. And if you have not watched Devs yet,
I need to,
please, man. Do, because there are a lot of Dev actors in this movie, in the main cast with Kaylee Spaney and Stephen McKinley Henderson, and also, you know, cameos throughout the film. And I feel like that truly is maybe his greatest work, even though he's done, like, I think Ex Machina is my favorite film of his. I think Devs really sums him up perfectly as a voice or a visionary. And I know he doesn't probably will like this, but yeah. As a visionary science fiction storyteller. And so with that, I'm giving Civil War 3.5 out of 5. It's so I even like aspects of Men. I don't think Men works completely, but I like that he was going with folk horror in that and sort of exchanging that from the science fiction aspect. But all of his films have one thing in common in terms of what he ultimately gets to. This is longer and obviously sort of more ambitious and vast in terms of the set pieces, but it ends at the White House and it becomes a siege movie. Mm-hmm. Ex Machina, single location, kind of a siege movie where you have, you know, AI and humankind fighting over, you know, what could be the next step in evolution. Annihilation, single location in a bubble that's been infected, aliens fighting for, you know, domination.
Dread.
With Dread, single location, yeah. You know, Men, Devs, all of these movies are very much of one mindset. And so, like, you can tell, like, he has things that he goes back to constantly.
Totally. So if he doesn't want to buy into the auteur thing, we'll place it on to him.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening or watching. We really, really do appreciate it. Please go check out our Letterboxd, where all of our reviews and videos and podcasts and ratings and everything is, which is Untitled_Movies. Right? Or did we switch that?
I have no idea.
You know what? I'm at this point now where we've been, you know, it's been a... The last year and a half has been a year and a half, you know? It is
Untitled_Movies.
I know I changed one of them, but I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, Untitled_Movies over on Letterboxd. And you can find more of my work around the internet, but mostly at UntitledMoviePodcast.com. And you can follow me on all those social medias at Matt Rohrbeck.
And I'm Eric Marchin. You can find more of my video reviews on RogersTV.com. And please, if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, if you're watching this first, there's an interview with Alex Garland. Only had 7 minutes with him, but it was a really good conversation. And I think he brought some really interesting things up to light with his collaboration process, the ethical nature of violence, and, you know, just whether or not he sees himself as a director or writer first. And so, you know, like, I'm really appreciative of the people over at Elevation Pictures for making that possible. And social media is at EM6211.
And you have a couple more interviews coming up. Plug those.
Yes. So I have an interview coming up with Caitlin Cronenberg for Humane. And I have an interview coming up with Radu Jude for Do Not Worry, or pardon me, Do Not Expect Too Much from the End of the World. Long title, but it's a fun conversation. So I'm excited for people to check those out.
You can check out our review for Godzilla Kong, The New Empire, or X-Men 97. Both of those are up right now on this channel. And we'll have reviews for Cuckoo, the Dan Stevens, Hunter Schafer, neon horror movie. As well as Challengers, the Luca Guadagnino tennis thriller. So
tennis thriller.
I cannot wait to talk about that. So stay tuned for those. Those will be up soon. And I'm sure we'll be covering, Planet of the Apes is coming soon. Deadpool is coming soon. We're getting into that summer movie season. So
Furiosa. Will we talk about Mad Max Fury Road and bring up those old wounds?
We will. Yeah. We will. So will I watch Fury Road for like a sixth time giving it a shot? I don't know if I will, but I can't wait for that and more. So thank you all. Until next time.
America.
Fuck yeah.